right, welcoming to the show, we have Dark Winds actress Emilia Rico.
Hello.
Very proud graduate of the University of Houston and awarded as Best Ensemble Cast for the movie Rich Kids by three different festivals. She's a rising actress thanks to the Tony Hillerman adaptation Dark Winds, and more recently even just guest starring on various shows including Yellowstone, as well as the Amazon Prime Blumhouse horror movie anthology Madres.
Yeah, welcome. Alongside Tenochtitlan, who you can now see on Wakanda Forever, by the way.
There you go. It's a small world, right? For him.
Yes.
She's also worked in numerous industrial videos for Team-Based Care and Facebook, and has been recently been getting into her own short film production company with the help of her husband. And welcome to the show.
Thank you. Yeah, I call myself a filmmaker by necessity, because we started our production company about 20 years ago because I was an actor with no reel, you know, and as anybody who's a starting actor knows, there's a catch-22, you know, you can't really get your foot in the door without a reel. You can't get a reel without footage. You can't get footage without getting your foot in the door and getting a job. So we started creating our own projects, and started out, you know, for my own benefit in order to get myself a reel. And then slowly but surely we started creating award-winning short films and music video and all kinds of projects. I just won for a film festival called Theater Live Online. Film festival.
Is that done over Zoom?
No, it's they were going to do it live, but a lot of them got COVID, unfortunately. I mean, they were going to do it, you know, in person, but some of them got COVID, so they're just doing it online for now. But they've invited my project, The Book of Magdalene, which was a production I did with Main Street Theater. They're going to, hopefully, we'll see, cross fingers, if everything goes right, they'll be showing it on Roku for free, so you'll be able to see that.
There you go, that or Tubi, baby. It's here. So where does the before we backtrack a bit, where did your production name Recarnel Productions, where does that originate from?
Yeah, Recarnel. Yeah, it's it's a mixture of me and my husband's last names, my maiden name Rico and his name Ornelas. So we kind of put those two together, Recarnel Productions, but it kind of backfires on us a bit, because then people assume he's Rick Ornell and they start calling him Rick. So we have people that still to this day have known us for quite a while and still will call him Rick, just because it's like in their head.
Damn,
I'm
us
like,
Americans.
We've told you several times his name's not Rick. His name's Art, by the way, if anybody's wondering.
It's rough. And it's pretty cool to see how you got a lot of progressive themes and how you're proud of your heritage, which is, you know, very mixed, Latinx and indigenous. Yes. And you're mainly just have a lot of feminine themed short films. Is there any way we can see some of these short films online?
Oh, yeah. You can visit recarnel.com. That's RICORNEL.com.
Okay, nice.
And that's our website, which will lead you to an array of our work, including our YouTube channel, which I believe is like youtube.com/recarnelproductions. If I'm not mistaken, it might be Recarnel Pro. Who knows? I'm not sure. I'll have to look that up. But you can get it directly from our website. So that's the easiest way to get to a lot of our filmography, which you can see a lot of our short films. As I mentioned, with the catch-22 on actors, we created an indie film workshop for actors that have that same problem to be able to produce their own works. So we get a group of actors that come in and produce an ensemble piece. So a lot of our films from the indie film workshop are also in our YouTube channel, which you can see on YouTube and on our website.
That is very cool. Is that also part of the award-winning independent short that you got, something like Sunshine?
Oh yeah, Something Like Sunshine was a web series, which you can actually see on facebook.com/somethinglikesun. And that one, you can watch the full series. It was actually web series that was written by LJ Waller, and she was just someone that wanted, that had a story in her heart that she wanted telling, and she came to our production company and asked if we could help her get that, you know, story told. So I came on as director and as producer, and our production company helped her realize that film, so, or that web series. So it was a really cool production. We got a lot of Sweet. Awards for that one, and I'm really proud of the work we did there.
Very nice. So let's backtrack a little more strongly. So again, you know, you're a San Antonio gal, now you're based in Houston, and were you already kind of doing plays for fun before slowly, you know, telling, you know, your loved ones, hey, I do want to actually make this my life?
Yeah, I never had a backup plan when I tell the story quite a lot, so I'm sure some people have already heard it. But when I was 5, my mom walked in on me crying, just crying in tears in front of the mirror, and she asked what I was doing, and I just looked at her very seriously and said, I'm practicing crying. Like, it was just the most natural thing in the world to be doing. So I just knew just from the beginning that I wanted to be an actor, and there was just nothing that was going to stop me. So I came to U of H, I studied acting directing there, in theater acting directing, and then wow. I realized, you know, I was never really going to get anywhere. I was never going to get a hand up. Like, no one was going to help me get anything. So I decided to kind of put things, you know, and on myself, and me and my husband bought some cameras. You know, at the time they were a little cheap, digital cameras. The digital mm-hmm. was just starting to come out. So actually, no, they were tape deck cameras.
Oh man,
I'm dating myself now, but yeah, they had the little mini tape decks. And we started making films, and then, you know, eventually everything became digital and a lot easier to produce. But yeah, that's how I got my start as a filmmaker, and then also showcasing my work as an actor. So yeah, luckily we've been able to.
Yeah, your husband was always there for you. What did you do? You know, because we need some inspiration, especially for those who are struggling or yeah. working a 9-to-5 job, but really want to do something else before, you know, they get up there in age. What did you do to just kind of maintain just some positive thinking and just pat on the back and just say it's not the end of the world? You'll get there eventually.
Yeah, I mean, I think the most important thing is surrounding yourself with positive thinking people. Okay. So that you don't have, you know, people
it's not always
telling
easy.
You get the
cynics, you get the ones who want to help you. But
yeah, and you know, I had a lot of doors slammed in my face, trust me, I know.
Oh yeah.
Literally and figuratively.
Oh dear.
So I had one of the big issues I had was just my look. You know, at the time in the early 2000s, there wasn't really a lot of roles for someone that looked like me. And
how far we've come, guys.
Yeah. So, I mean, it, really the success I've gotten in acting has been in the past 2 years. So during the pandemic, yes, during
to hit
COVID.
On that, John Leguizamo was recently on yes. Conan earlier this year, and he had his darkly humorous story about how he was just around like 92. He was like applying for like 2 different plays and then like 5 different film roles. And then he comes out of one casting audition and meets a then, you know, semi-known Benjamin Brad and Benicio del Toro, and they're like, what do you apply for? And they're like, they're both like, we applied for the same, you know, comedic mm-hmm. friend, husband, and shitty gangbanger role that you did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, so it is very hard to just kind of be able to stand out, and it's even more difficult because you're not sure if the movie's stereotypical or it just so coincidentally yeah. happens to be a negative role, but it actually has depth to it. But you just don't know because, you know, there's no filmmaker attached to it. It's just a script. And you don't know until mm-hmm. it's enhanced and worked out. But it's still annoying because it still reads as kind of something that's not very progressive.
Yeah, yeah. It was really hard. I mean, I more power to them. You know, people like John Leguizamo and Benjamin Bratt and all those Latino actors, Latino actors, Latinx actors back in the day that were able to get things done. I took
Latino's
my hat
is a good example.
Because,
yeah, some of them yeah. is like all they could get was I think Mary Chanchito Alonso and Sonia Braga, I think they said, is like all they would get was just sexy girlfriend roles. No. It's like, I don't want to keep doing that.
Yeah, maid, sexy, you know, hot.
The maid, yeah.
Stripper roles or something, yeah. Definitely. And I was never the hot type, like even young, you know, I just didn't read as like the hot girlfriend type. So there really wasn't a whole lot of roles for me. And as progressive as theater tries to be, even here in Houston, where there's, you know, a very diverse group of people living here, mm-hmm. Even here, you know, it's very difficult to it was very difficult to get roles. I would go and audition for, you know, several times. I mean, this happened quite a few times. I would go and audition for a role and the director would single me out, or like in the middle of like all the other actors, they would like run up to me and be like, oh my god, you did such an amazing job, I just want to tell you how great you were, you just blew me away. And every time I would be like, oh my god, I'm gonna get this role, you know, the director like singled me out and told me how great I was. And every single time I would not get the role. And eventually I realized, oh, okay, they're telling me that because they know they're not going to cast me.
They're complimenting I'm not you.
What I, but they're, at yeah, the same physically, time. I'm not what they want, but they want to tell me how great I was. I mean, usually you tell someone how great they were by casting them, you know, mm-hmm. But since they're not going to cast me, they need to, you know, literally tell me. So then, you know, eventually I realized, you know, no one's going to hand me this. No one's going to give me that big role. I'm going to have to just do it on my own. So
exactly.
So I did. Yeah.
Oh man. So you've just pointed out some big pointers on just continually just experimenting, going to different auditions, just blanking out a lot of the negativity. Were you already pretty proud of your heritage? I know there was pretty easy back throughout the 80s and 90s. There was a lot of fear mongering still. There still is, unfortunately, today, but it's just
You know, it's abundant. Difficult because you grow up seeing, you know, very whitewashed TV. Mm-hmm. And so I always, you know, one of the self-negative talks that I would say to myself was, oh, if only I was, you know, whiter, if only I had, you know, lighter hair, lighter skin, lighter eyes, if only I was thinner, if only I was, you know, this, that, or the other. And those are, you know, everyone has an if only, even, you know, even people you would think like, I wish I looked like that person, they're going to have their own, if only I had this, if only I had that. So you just have to, you know, take those, all those negative talks that you say to yourself, all those things you say, you know, write them down, ball them up into a little ball and throw them in the trash, you know, burn them, whatever you want to do.
Don't let it eat you up.
Yeah, start focusing on the things that you do have that someone else doesn't have. You know, what makes you you? What makes you unique? What makes you stand out in the crowd? And I think really when I, you know, as a Latinx person, someone that comes with their background coming from Mexico or their ancestry coming in from Mexico, you're taught, you know, you're Mexican. And then you start realizing, or I start realizing, I'm not Mexican. You know, I'm not that, like, Mexican, I guess you can think of as like a whole new thing. But when people think of Mexican, they think of Spanish speaking, they think of, you know, just very Spaniard colonial idea of Mexico.
Stereotyped there too, unfortunately.
And I'm not that Mexican. I'm not that type of Mexican. And I really started to focus more on my indigenous qualities. Because you know, my indigeneity comes from Central Mexico, South Texas. So a lot of my ancestry, you know, derives from that native, the Native Americans that settled there. And so as soon as I started really focusing on that, on like my individualism and what makes me me, and what makes me different from, you know, your average this or that, is when I started to really kind of hone my brand and hone my, just my idea of what problem do I solve in the casting room? And once I knew what problem I solved in the casting room, I was going into the right casting rooms. Because a lot of the times when you're getting a lot of no's and you're a really great actor, like those ones that I was getting where they're like, oh my God, you're amazing, but I'm not going to cast you. It's because I was going into the wrong casting rooms. You know, these are the casting rooms that, you know, they were looking for something specific that I just was not going to fill no matter how great of an actress I was. So you just have to realize, okay, these are the casting rooms I want. So a lot of the times with actors, especially with female actors, we're told that the only way you're going to be an actor is if you're, you know, beautiful and tall and thin and all these things. But I mean, you look at TV and you see all shapes and sizes of people and all types of people. So you really got to say, okay, I'm not the ingenue actor. Just because I'm not the ingenue actor doesn't mean that I can't be on TV. I can't be on film. I just fill a different role. I have to make sure that I'm going to those casting rooms instead of the casting room for the ingenue, because then I'm just going to keep getting no's and, you know, doors slammed in my face. And that's not helping me.
That's so many good points there. This is just like any other job interview, and half the interview tips become outdated. There were many times where I was told, oh, ask questions. And half the time I was literally being told by the interviewer, okay, bye now. Stop asking me questions. But no, that's cool that you brought that up. It's like, because it gets even more cryptic. It's like, I've seen so many other actors and comedians basically say so many different things differently. Has that worked for you?
Yeah, like
don't ever say it the same way. Yeah.
Like when you're doing sides and things. Yeah, you just got to find your own voice and how does that connect to the character, and really kind of think about the character itself that you're trying to portray, and like connect it with either something personally or something that you know of, or you know, and just give truth to it. Like if you're giving your own truth to it, then it'll feel right. Like if you're just trying to, I think this is how it would be said without any kind of really reasoning behind it, then that's not connecting with the character. You really gotta say it out of your own, you know, give it some heft, to give it some feeling. Yeah. and that'll definitely get you at least to book the, as my casting guru says, you book the room. You know, if you can book the room, then that's, you know, that's better. That's
the best thing you can do with these guys.
Yeah. I mean, you book the room, you may not book the part, but someone in that room is going to think of you. You know, the next time they're casting something.
Yeah. Isn't that wild though, too? It's like it took the wrong audition to get the right job.
Yeah. You'll be surprised how many times, you know, you'll meet someone or, you know, audition for someone 1 year, and then like, you know, 5 years later, you'll get a call and it's someone that was in that room that remembered you
when I needed you.
You know, that remembered you 5 years ago and be like, you know, this other part came across my desk and I thought of you because, you know, you did such an amazing job that time. That's even good. Though we didn't cast you for that, I think you're great for this one. You know, you never know.
A lot of patience. have there been any shows where you've had to audition multiple times and?
Oh yeah. I auditioned for Dark Winds. I auditioned for several of the roles. I actually auditioned for the lead for Bernadette first time. I knew I was going to get that. Like I said, I'm not the ingenue.
It's an interesting
but
one.
You know, I'll audition. It was fun.
I saw some Native American viewers complaining about its authenticity online, and then it seemed like a lot of people were clarified. It's like, okay, it might be based on, you know, a whitewashed version, but the entire writer's room is indigenous. They want to make it legit as they can.
Definitely. Yeah. The source material may have been, you know, written by a white man, but yeah, definitely they have worked their asses off to make this as, you know, as legitimate and to really just uplift the piece and legitimize it. Cause it is a really well-known series in the reservations, you know, like, because, you know, at the time there's really not any stories of that feature indigenous characters.
Exactly.
You know, so just the fact, even though it was written not by an indigenous writer, just the fact that there are indigenous characters in this book very strongly, you know, it throughout the series, that it's very well known in all over Indian country, as they call it. So yeah, a lot of them know the piece, and you know, some people have, you know, good and bad thoughts on it, but I think even the people that originally were kind of not on board, when once they saw the series, they saw, you know, the work that the writers and the producers all put into it to make sure that it was authentic and legitimize the whole piece.
It's serious. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a few jokes going in back and forth on how every other actor on this is also on Reservation Dogs.
Oh yeah. There are quite, I mean, it's a small market. It's a small, the indigenous, the indigenous community, acting community, is not that big right now. We're a small but mighty group, and I think that's one thing that has really, you know, secured success for me as well, because I'm joining, because when you really, you know, bullseye your brand and you say this is the, you know, this is the problem I solve in the casting room, then you start realizing how small that niche is, how narrow that niche is. You know, a lot of the a lot of the issues that actors have also, or that a lot of things that they're told or they think they're supposed to do is solve everybody's problem. Oh, I can play anyone. Oh, you want me to be a cop? I can be a cop. You want me to be a nurse? I can be a nurse. No, that's not what you need to do, especially if you're just starting out. What you need to do is just pinpoint exactly the problem you solve and solve that problem, and just go at that bullseye. Because if you're just shooting blindly, you know, you're just going to get wall. You know, you want to make sure that you get that bullseye, because that's what's going to reel in the, you know, the work for you. So once I realized what my bullseye was, and I was able to find that smaller, much smaller room, that's going to give me a lot more opportunity. And definitely right now, there's a lot of work for Native actors, and not a lot of Native actors that have, you know, a lot under their belt, you know, other than, you know, people like Zahn McLarnon, who've been in this business for, you know, over 30 years, I
believe. He's like from New York,
quite
right?
Quite a long time. Yeah. So, you know, hats off to the actors that have been doing all the Indian roles, you know, all the like stereotype roles all these years. Now they're getting to produce things like Zahn.
It only took the sixth stage of their career.
Yeah. So now they're getting to produce Cardinal things, and definitely, yeah, they've had to do all those ridiculous roles, and then now they're getting to produce their own roles and make sure that the actors that they cast are authentically indigenous, not only authentically indigenous, but also, you know, the characters are authentic and you know, more, you know, showing more real life indigeneity rather than, you know, the Hollywood indigeneity that we've all, you know, come to see on TV. You know, we laugh like Reservation Dogs. No, we laugh, we cry, we do everything. You know, we're just people like everybody else. We're not, you know, the stoic Indian the way we're very usually, you know, portrayed. Or, you know, the sexy Pocahontas or any of that.
Yeah.
You know, we want to show well-rounded, you know, people. It's a very exciting time right now, I think. And, you know, I've been blessed to be able to work alongside Zahn and all these actors, and to have been picked by them and be seen and be able to represent, you know.
1,000%.
Amazing.
More importantly, to complement that, now that you're growing, you know, you've grown as an actress, you know, you're getting bigger and bigger material now. It also helps that you're, you know, working with someone who previously adapted Hillerman, you know, Chris Iyer, and, you know, I watched a lot of PBS growing up, so I have fun telling everyone this is how this version of Jim Chee and company where here's how this version is. He's more heroic this time around. Leap Horns taking rank. Do you have any other just kind of actors who you kind of felt like you guys kind of really enhanced each other in a way?
Yeah, you know, I became really good friends with one of the actors on Dark Winds, Riffin Phoenix. No, Riffin Phoenix. She plays Wanda. She's the one that I put a spell on.
Wow.
I'm really good friends with her. We just had a laugh. We were just laughing. I think we got in trouble quite a few times for making too much noise because they're like trying to do this very serious scene and we're like over there laughing in the corner.
Elva Guerra?
Elva's great. Yeah, she plays my daughter. She's on Reservation Dogs too. I actually didn't recognize her when I first saw her because she had black hair. And you know, she was saying, oh yeah, my hair was blonde because of the previous role I was playing. And I was like, oh yeah, what were you in? And she was like, Reservation Dogs. And I was like,
that's
wait.
You?
I was like, because I was obsessed. I mean, when I tell you I was obsessed with Reservation Dogs, I had already seen it like twice over.
Oh really?
And I was like, what? I was like, oh my
both
God.
Of them kind of a slow burn, like, kind of. They're both on, you know, cable TV, which will take, you know, the build up ratings,
slow,
you know,
slow build up for sure. Yeah, so I was really excited to be able to work with her, but I only got that one scene with her in the beginning of that first episode, but yeah, she was great. She's a sweet I am so sorry, Elva. They were a very great person to
all good
with, for sure.
What was it like filming your fight scene with Jessica Madden?
Oh yeah! Oh my
plays
God!
That the deputy was... Manuelito.
That was an exciting time. So
my mother and I were on the edge of our seat. We're like, this is not, you know, this is not formulaic TV. This is not going to end well. I'm afraid someone's going to get impaled with a candle or something.
Yeah, who knows what could have happened, right? No. We got to rehearse a bit of that like the night before we had to film it, and then we filmed it. And I did have a stunt double, which you can see my stunt there. For some reason, they show my stunt double. If you look at it very quickly, there's a scene where they show her face. And I'm like, why did they even have her in this? Why didn't they have me? It was like, she's just standing there. It's when she passes by
too
and she's
reshoots.
Just in the background. Yeah, I don't know what was going on there. But for the most part, I did a lot of my own stunts. Like I did the where she kicks me and I fall back, and we're grappling in the hallway. All of that was me. So it was very awesome to be able to do a lot of that on my own. You know, shout out to the stage combat classes at U of H that I took quite a few years
great,
ago. I won't
they?
Say
right?
how many, but yeah,
I took it in college. It is along with improv. I recommend everyone do it because there's just so many who just.
You never know when they might be useful.
Right. But it also frees up your fears. It kind of just alleviates a lot of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to book a flight. I'm not going to think twice about it. Boom. I'm going to do this. I'm going to go out. I'm going to.
Yeah. Yeah. It does definitely.
The sense of having to ask for permission kind of has to, it goes away.
Yeah. Yeah. You grow up. You grow up quite a lot in stage combat class.
Totally. You're willing to literally just fall backwards without. Yeah. Even looking twice behind. Any description of just kind of the New Mexico filming locations? Like a lot of them, it seemed like were also previously used for material like the Breaking Bad saga, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know what happened to my camera, but
oh, it's all good. It's...
It's beautiful in New Mexico. I mean, I was there, I think last year, September through October. I think my last shot was sometime, I want to say late October, maybe November. So I was there right before snow really started hitting. So as I was leaving, I could see the mountains capped with snow. And I was like, I'm going to miss the snow. So I didn't get to see the snow there. But while I was there, you know, during the fall months, it was just gorgeous. You know, this Texas girl has no idea about fall weather, about like true fall weather.
Yeah,
you know, the leaves get turning golden and all that stuff. I was like freaking out. I was like with Riffin, like, look at the trees, yellow and God. And she's like, okay. She's like, you need to calm down.
You damn Texans, you don't know what you're talking about.
Girl. So she was just laughing, but but I was very excited to like recording it and doing all kinds of stuff. Nice. But yeah, I would get really cold at night. So they would there's this one scene where I pop out at Jessica Madden in the middle of the night.
Get into character. She's ready for that next day.
We would have, you know, warming jackets. They always have these really giant warming jackets for the actors, and I love those jackets. So they're very cozy. And it had a little van for us and get us hot chocolate or hot tea or whatever we wanted, so to keep us warm. And they have these like what are those things that you can break, and it the warming pads or whatever, that you can like break them and then they come warm. So those are cool. They take care of you, you know. But no, it does get pretty cold at night, but it was definitely beautiful scenery. I mean, the just the mountains, or the all the, you know, landscape was gorgeous. And then they told me when I got there, one of the drivers was saying, oh yeah, they've been filming a lot of stuff here. I heard that they're filming SpongeBob here. I was like, what? They're like, yeah, because the topography looks like underwater. And when I looked at it, I was like, yeah, it does kind of, when you look at all the bushes and all the like all the dried up, you know, sage bushes and things. It does kind of look like underwater, but above water, you know, like, because everything's so brown. Cryptic humor. if you look at it with that kind of eye, you'll see. And I was like, it does kind of look like underwater now that I look at it properly. Anyway.
Did you have to actually study any kind of like, potential like Navajo folklore, or had you already kind of heard about it growing up?
I had looked up, you know, specifically Navajo. The Navajo are very protective of their folklore. And that's one of the reasons why some people kind of don't like Tony Hillerman, because he's like out there telling their stuff.
Understood.
But yeah, they're very protective of their folklore. And one of the things, yeah, they're very, very superstitious. So even on set, when I went in to talk to Chris Iyer, the director, I was like, okay, so I just want to like be clear. Is my character really, you know, the W word? Or because we were not allowed to say that word on set, like
almost it was gonna bring Lady Macbeth's name back.
Yeah, exactly. Like, can't say the M word on a stage for sure. The Scottish play, you can't say the Scottish play on
don't do it, don't open
stage
that.
You can't say the W word on set, you know. So so I had to be very careful with my words when talking to Chris, because he's not
can we have the talk.
Yeah, and even like I said, when I was filming that one scene with Jessica in the middle of the night, there's that scene, I'd jump out and I would pop back in. And a lot of, you know, one of the great things about Dark Winds is that they really not only cast indigenous people on camera, but they also had a lot of indigenous and Navajo PAs and just people that work behind the camera. So one of the PAs, who was the one that was in the bush with me to make sure I popped out when I was supposed to, or whatever, or if I needed anything. She's Navajo. So whenever I would pop out and I would come back, she'd be like rubbing like corn pollen on herself, you know, like the way Jessica does in the show. She'd like be doing that. And I'm like, what are you doing? And she's like, oh, my grandma gave me this corn pollen, and she told me that I had to rub it on myself. So yeah, they're very superstitious when it comes to these things. And they have a lot of, you know, very specific folklore and very specific ceremonial practices. And so I definitely did do some research on all that. And, you know, talked to Chris about what exactly, you know, was I pretending, you know, all that kind of things, and to get kind of more of a sense of who Ada was. But a lot of it was just, you know, up to me. I just had to sort of put my own backstory in it. And if you notice, and a lot of people I don't think notice, there's a scene in episode, I believe it's episode 2, where, yeah, because that's the episode I'm not in. I'm technically not in, but I am in. Zahn is in my house, you know, and mm-hmm. he's looking around and he has his little flashlight or whatever, and he flashes through and you see a picture of me on the wall. And if you notice, the picture is a really old,
my mother caught
really
it.
Old picture. Yeah, like
she's bad at detective shows. I'm often having to restate, no, see, so and so is looking for the clue because of this and that, and she totally got it. She's like, oh no, the witch, she's over there.
yeah, but no, if you see the photos, much older than it should be, if you know what I mean.
Oh,
and well, I look the same yeah. as I do in the show. And the show is set in the 1970s, and the photo
gotcha
is set much older. I mean, we're in traditional clothes, so a lot of people I think chalk it up to you know, I'm just in traditional clothes, but
playing around with some way kind of the magic there.
Yeah, the way the photo is supposed to be portrayed is that it's like from the 1870s or something to that effect, and I look the same. So,
maybe so, you have yeah. a doppelganger. Maybe there's someone
yeah,
who you
it's
killed.
My great grandmother.
You have a daughter who Artemis, who's acted in some of your shorts. I guess. Yeah. Any chance the producers can repay you and have your next of kin also on the show next season?
You know, I hope so. I've been trying to like, you know, kind of.
Come on, guys, this is one
put
thing.
That in there.
Let's do one thing.
Put in there. No, I have a daughter. She's 10 years old now. She looks almost just like
there's
me.
There's plenty of kid roles. Yeah, she can be.
She can play a young Ada if you ever want to do a.
You can do that. You know,
backstory
she could be,
episode.
Jessica's character Bernadette, or even
yeah,
Zahn's
yeah.
character
yeah,
Joe
could, be young,
could have a kid.
Sure.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah,
creative license. I mean, I think we're slowly. I'll let you weigh in on this. Do you think we're also slowly getting better at casting kid roles? Because like it seemed like for a while, just like there just wasn't too many who could just like cast a proper actor. Like. Adults yeah. didn't want to mess with them. They found him annoying, and kids didn't have any pointers or guidance. It seemed like
yeah,
Spielberg.
You know, definitely kids improv. Are getting much better at acting. So now,
yeah,
I feel like a lot of the shows that have kid actors have been killing it, like Stranger Things and you know, Reservation Dogs. Of course, they're much a little older, but
mm-hmm.
excuse me, I'm getting over a kind of a cough, so
oh dear,
please be patient with me, but let me drink some water, that might help. But yeah, I mean, I think the actors, definitely young actors, have been really pulling through.
Let's hope, you know. It's long overdue. Anything else that you're currently working on that you really, you know, you gotta promote, you gotta remind everyone, hey, it's a thing?
Well, I did ask permission to see if I could reveal something on today's podcast, but unfortunately, okay. I did not get that permission.
Oh, no, that's fine.
But there will be something that's coming up very, very, very soon that you'll be able to see me on. A very highly anticipated show, another recurring role. So it'll be, you know, you'll have to be like, I mean, I'm featured very prominently, but I don't know if you'll recognize me. Let's just say that.
I'll surprise you. You know, I look for this kind of thing. You know, there's plenty of times where I'm even making note while watching a movie or show, and everyone's like, are you joking around on Instagram? I'm like, no, I'm legit. I want to look up some cool trivia in between the slower moments of a movie.
Yeah, it'll be. I did have to do some makeup and hair for this project, but you know, the funny thing with Dark Winds is while I was filming this other project, up north, there were I was hiking and I ran into some other hikers, and I was talking to them, and it came out that I was in Dark Winds, and I was like, oh yeah, I was in Dark Winds. They're like, really, what were you? And I was like, oh, I was a witch. And they're like, really? Oh my god, like they totally didn't recognize me as a witch, and they're like, oh wow.
They did a hell of a job.
Like, yeah,
makeup.
I've seen it. Yeah, exactly.
I think it was well, the hair braiding, because I did see your appearance on Yellowstone prior, and I was like, wait.
Yeah, oh, so then the gentleman was like,
that one gal. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, what did they do with your, whatever they did with your makeup, but you look so scary. I was like, okay, here's the thing. I had no makeup on. They literally would, I would go into the makeup trailer and they would put sunblock on me and they'd be like, you're on your way. That's all I got is sunblock.
Right? Oh, man.
So I don't know. I don't know what to say about that. I either... just look like a witch or, or just had no
you
makeup
just
on.
Did your job as an actress. You enveloped the part, it just,
yeah. I would actually, I braided my own hair because they the first day they curled my hair, and it took a very long time, and it just was like a crimped kind of look, and I was like, I could just braid, let me try that again.
Pick two.
Yeah. I was like, I could just braid my hair, and then it'll have this, when I take the braids out, it'll have the same crimped look. And so I did that. That was much easier, a much easier day than having to crimp it.
Nice.
Which took like 30 minutes or something. And it took a ridiculous amount of time. I was like, this takes too long.
Have you ever thought of getting into hair and makeup as also kind of a side gig in film, or?
Oh yeah, I did.
I saw that you had a lot of arts and crafts on your resume. And...
Yeah, I used to do makeup. I did opera makeup or opera. I worked out at the HGO, Houston Grand Opera, and I did hair and makeup. And I actually used to I think the most prominent story I have from working at HGO is we did Aida one year, and the wigs for Aida, I mean, wigs for lack of a better term, were made of upholstery rope, like thick rope on chicken wire. And we really had to attach those on people's heads. Yeah. Upholstery rope and chicken wire, and we had to put that on these ladies' heads, and oh, that did not go well. Let me tell you. Dear. Some of them, we had to take some of them off and redo the whole look for some of them, because some of them they couldn't handle it. It was so heavy on their heads, and they literally, was one lady went off stage and just threw up because it gave her such a headache. But yeah, I could do the wefting of the wigs and things. Like, I have experience and I've been able to do all that kind of stuff. So it's really fun when I go into the makeup and hair trailers, because I'm like, oh yeah, I've done this. So I have a lot of fun with them because we talk the same. We have the same background.
That's great. Any live theater that plays that you'd like to promote, or other shorts that you're developing?
Oh yeah. Like I said, my Book of Magdalene just won at the Theater Live Online Festival. And so hopefully we'll see if that's going to be on Roku in December. we're waiting to see if all the powers that be say yes. If so, that might be available for the public for free to be able to be seen. Unfortunately, when we did it here, we did it during the pandemic. Oof, and yeah. Purposely we did it during the pandemic because there wasn't any theater. We filmed it because I am a filmmaker and someone that has a background in theater. I was, uniquely qualified to do this production. So I was able to direct it, as well as my company was able to film it and get it produced. And so it was supposed to be one of those things that was available online for people to watch, during the pandemic, and be like, oh, if you miss the theater, here's something you can watch. But unfortunately, it It premiered the week before the big snowstorm that hit Texas that blew out all of Texas.
Ice storm.
Big ice storm in what was that, 2021? Or was it 2020?
Like
that.
Yeah. I know, it's all
and,
blur.
Yeah, it's all like blur. 2020. The whole... Whatever, right? Yes.
The 2020s. The 2020s. In one word.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And it was really unfortunate because we had just gotten a great review in the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, and nobody in Houston got it because we didn't get that newspaper at all. You know how usually you could go to a Barnes & Noble or whatever and pick up the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times. Well, they didn't get a delivery of it because the snowstorm stopped any kind of anything coming in. So it was really unfortunate, but it was unfortunate for all of Texas because, you know, a lot of us were suffering and, you know, I had no power, no water.
We lucked out with this podcast. This is when we were just getting into it, but we were almost rooming and like, well,
yeah, like what are we gonna do? Yeah, but now, yeah, then people were like bored, you know, what are you gonna do? You turn to art when
you gotta feed the creative beast inside of you.
When you're completely bored.
Any final food for thought you'd like to leave others with?
So if you're out there and you're an actor and you're trying to figure out, you know, should I do this? Should I not? I mean, really, it's got to be something that you cannot live without. It is not it's not for the faint of heart. I want to tell you that.
Yeah.
So it's got to be something that if there's something else you can do, definitely do that. But if this is all you know and all you can ever see yourself doing, just make sure to really figure out what your bullseye is. I highly recommend listening to Bonnie Gillespie. She has a book called The Self-Management for the Actor. Mm-hmm. And it's really a life-changing book. And she has, you know, a website, she has Facebook.
You hear that, guys? Instead of Instagram. Taking an acting class by a husband, the Bonnie Gillespie book.
Yeah, that, I mean, on top, I mean, you still have to do acting classes, don't get me wrong. But just Self-Management for the Actor kind of gives you kind of the know-how and like of the business of acting and how to manage your own career. So yeah, I highly recommend that book. Follow her on all the social medias. She has all of them. Bonnie Gillespie, she's fantastic. She has, you know, ways that you can, you know, you can get information from her, like or workshops from her, or you could just read all the stuff she already has for free. So any which way you want to learn, whether you need one-on-one information or just, you know, I'll just read all the things that I can get my hands on. She's got you covered. So I highly recommend that.
That's very empowering. That's great.
And also, you know, check me out on ameliarico.com.
Rico, she's a big thing. In fact, I'll even quote Starship Troopers. Rico, you know what to do.
There you go.
Blast having you on here.
Yes, thank you for having me.
We'll return after these messages.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR. We add them to our queues. We wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide, all across the globe. We are in the US, we are in the UK, we are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan, we're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, Naruto, all things that we love, all manga that were originally published in the legendary magazine Weekly Shonen Jump.
But not every series can run for 300 chapters and have a hit anime. This is David.
This is Jordan.
We're the hosts of Shonen Flop. Each episode, we look at manga that ran in Jump that didn't quite make it.
We discuss what it did wrong, what it did right, how the series could have turned itself around, and ultimately, was it a flop or not?
We're on all your favorite podcast apps, and you can find us at shonenflop.com.
Keep on flopping, floppers.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up.